Good evening, everybody. How are you? Thank you again for coming out. This is the second week I have to thank everybody for coming out in the snow. So just because it's the second time I have to do it, it doesn't mean you get any less schar. You still get a lot of schar, even though it's the second week that some of you have come out. And if you didn't come out last week in the snow, then a double yeshar kach for coming out, having the bravery to make it out this evening in the frigid snow. First of all, thank you. Snacks tonight are sponsored Le'ili Nishmas Rachel Mina Bas Dov, or Dov there, I'm not sure, whose love for Torah learning and Chesed inspired many people. And thank you for that. I want to start, so we finished Makkah B'Patish. We spent 3 weeks on various applications of Makkah B'Patish. Tonight we're going to start a brand new topic that you probably have not covered in your Hilchot Shabbos journeys. And that's going to be the topic of Bona. Well, Makkah B'Patish you definitely didn't cover. But Bona also is probably a topic that you haven't covered. And the challenge is going to be, when you talk about Bona, so a lot of things, aspects of Bona relate to building and to screwing things in and to building buildings and pouring cement and plastering walls. And that we're not going to do on Shabbos anyway. So our goal is going to be to learn a little bit about Bona and find some practical applications that actually do happen in the kinds of Shabboses that we typically experience, and we'll come up with a few. Bona is going to be divided up into a few parts. Tonight will be, believe it or not, the first part. But let's first talk about where Bona happened in the Mishkan. Like all the 39 malachas, in order to qualify as a malacha, it had to have been done in the Mishkan, in the construction of the Mishkan. So who could tell me where there was a Bona in the construction of the Mishkan? They built the Mishkan. Wow, that's fabulous. Yes. There's a Yerushalmi who's just a tiny bit more specific than what you just said. And the Yerushalmi says the following. And if you listen carefully, you'll notice that there are some interesting twists that the Yerushalmi offers. The Yerushalmi says that the Bona that happened in the Mishkan was what? It's just about these weeks. These are the Mishkan building weeks. And we talk about all the words that we don't really know and we sort of skip over them. So we have Adanim and we have Krashim. Krashim, we might know what Krashim are. The boards, the slats, the planks, they were vertical, not like this, right? They're vertical slats, vertical boards, and those comprise the walls of the Mishkan. Now, the Mishkan had two parts. The Mishkan had the Chatzer, which was very large, or relatively large. That was made out of, what were those walls made out of? Curtains, right. And then you had a much smaller area, very, very small area of the actual Mishkan. If I'm not mistaken, it was only 30 amos long and 10 amos wide. 10 amos wide, about the length of this table. No, a little more. 10 amos is, let's say, 15 to 20 feet. So this is probably a 6-foot table or an 8-foot table. It's a 6-foot table, so it's 12 feet. So let's say 3 tables is the entire width of the Mishkan, and the length would be, you know, I guess 9 tables long. So that's a third of this room, let's say. The Mishkan was a third of this room. Maybe a little bit more. Maybe a little bit more. That's pretty small. Now, maybe half this room. So the Mishkan itself, so again, the outside of the Chatzer was relatively large. That was surrounded by curtains. The Mishkan itself was, those 30 amos long by 10 amos wide, were surrounded by vertical boards. Those are the Krashim. Now, 20 of those 30 amos were 20 of those 30 amos was called the Kodesh, and the Kodesh HaKodeshim was the back 10 by 10. So if you have, again, 30 deep, 10 amos wide. The back 10 by 10 was the Kodesh HaKodeshim. What was in there? That was the Aron HaEdos. Maybe the Luchos were the broken Luchos right next to it, perhaps, or inside the Aron. That's a discussion. Then there are 20 amos in front of them. Again, same width, 10 amos wide, 3 tables wide, and 20 amos long, 6 tables long. That was the rest. What was in there? There you had, what do you have in the front of the Mishkan? What we call the Kodesh, Menorah, and the Mizbeach. Which Mizbeach? I'll give you a hint. The Mishkan is small, so it had to be the big Mizbeach or the small Mizbeach? Small Mizbeach. What was on the small Mizbeach? Only, what did they burn on the small Mizbeach? Only the Ketores. Yes, the Mizbeach HaKetores, which is relatively small, made out of pure gold. So we have the menorah, we have the mizbeach, we have the shulchan, and I think that's about it. Those, I think, were the main, I think the kiyor was outside. Those were, I think, at least those three in the rest of the Mishkan. So in this Mishkan area where we have those three things, the Shulchan, the Mizbeach HaKtoris, small Mizbeach HaKtoris made out of gold, and the menorah, and then you have the Kodesh HaKodeshim, that small area was surrounded by vertical pillars of wood, crushim. Now, those crushim did not sit on the floor, rather they sat on top of adanim. I wish I had a blackboard or a projector or something, but adanim, the best English word is sockets. That's what I think the English translation is sockets, but they basically, each vertical board had two legs coming out, you know, like the legs of a ladder that stick out? So imagine that you have a thick board, and in the middle of the board, sticking out two legs. Underneath each leg, there's one socket to receive one leg, and there's another socket to receive the other leg. Those sockets were solid metal, they were heavy, they were a good stabilizer base for the vertical crushim, so the crushim wouldn't topple over so easily. And says the Yerushalmi, inserting the crushim into those sockets that's situated on the floor, one keresh into its sockets. The next keresh with the two prongs coming out from the bottom into those two sockets on the floor. Next to the next keresh, that was bona in the Mishkan, and that's why you and I are not allowed to build a house on Shabbos. Now, the Yerushalmi points out something very interesting. When we think of building, usually we think of, you build here, a foundation, then you build on top of that a floor, top of that you build walls, then you build a ceiling, then maybe you build a second floor, and then maybe you build a third floor. The Yerushalmi points out that the building of the Mishkan was not like that. It was one board, next to another board, next to another board. So it was not a vertical building, one on top of the other, but the building of the Mishkan was actually one next to the other, next to the other, next to the other. That's how the building of the Mishkan occurred, and therefore, you definitely, definitely, definitely have bona when you build things next to each other, even if you're not building something above one on top of the other. That's one point that Yerushalmi points out. Now, this is a tricky question. Why did we build the Mishkan? It's a trick question. I'm saying, why do we do any mitzvah? What? Nah, you're getting too technical. Not getting into the machlokes Rashi and Ramban. Why did we build the Mishkan? Hashem told us to build the Mishkan, so we built the Mishkan. Okay, so if Hashem tells you to do something, is that considered, and you do it, would that be considered a permanent thing or a temporary thing? Depends on the nature of the mitzvah. But Hashem tells you to do something. Does that make it into... So some people suggest in the Yerushalmi, one of the opinions in the Yerushalmi says, the fact that Hashem told us to build the Mishkan, even though, of course, the Mishkan was not really... You know, the Mishkan was built and taken down, but the fact that when we built it, it was with Al-Dvar Hashem, Al-Pi Hashem, that itself makes it as though it's a permanent structure. And therefore, you would only know that building permanent structures would count as bona. But maybe making shacks or sukkahs or what my kids made a few weeks ago before I started learning this with some pillows or blankets draped over all kinds of things to make little castles, I think they call them. Little huts in the living room made out of pillows and sheets and blankets. Those which are definitely not permanent, at least my wife and I would like them not to be permanent. So those might not be considered bona, because only permanent things, like something that you do all Devar Hashem. That's the first opinion in the Yerushalmi. Then the Yerushalmi continues and says, no. The very fact that the whole point of the Mishkan was only to be a temporary, till they get to, they know they're on their way to Eretz Yisrael. They know they're in Eretz Yisrael, they're going to have a Beis HaMikdash. And they know the whole point of this Mishkan is just to get them there. So even if you would leave it for, 19 years, for example, or maybe in Shiloh, how long was the Mishkan in Shiloh? I have no idea. But a lot of years, I don't want you to know. Okay, but there were two places in the Midbar, right? In the Midbar, we traveled for 40 years, but really two of the places, we were 19 years each. So really, that's 19 plus 19 settled in one place. So we really spent only 2 years really traveling. That's a different point. But even if we're somewhere for 19 years, that's considered temporary, the second opinion says. Why? Because we know we're on our way. We know this is only going to be just a buy station to get us to Eretz Yisrael, to get us to the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, the Yerushalmi concludes that really, not like the first opinion says, it's from Hashem, it makes it permanent. The second opinion says, no. The fact that we are using the Mishkan only to get to Eretz Yisrael, to get to the Beis HaMikdash, it's Even if it stays up for many years, it's still considered temporary. From that we learn, the second opinion in the Yerushalmi, that even temporary building can constitute a violation, can be considered bona, and therefore will be aser deoraisa on Shabbos. Even if it's a binyan l'sha'ah. That's what the words of the Yerushalmi say. Even if it's a moment, I don't want to say momentary, but even if it's not a permanent kind of building, that would also constitute a violation of bona. That's as far as the source for, in the Mishkan, for bona. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, Shehakol Nehiyeh Bedvarav. When we talk about bona, we're going to talk about different aspects. We're going to talk about buildings, but before we get to buildings, the first part of bona is we're going to talk about there's fixing buildings, there's building buildings, we'll talk about two different things, attaching things to buildings, you know, like, this I'm still in the midst of researching, but did you ever take a shower, either in your own shower or in a host house, and have those caddies that suction onto the wall? Was that building something when you attach that? Again, not getting into the fact that shampoo and soap bars might be mukta on Shabbos. Let's say you just have, I don't know, something, some liquid soap on it, or it falls off. Could you just stick it onto your wall on Shabbos? What about my daughter just got a new toothbrush? It's not a caddy that sticks onto the wall. It's a toothbrush that sticks onto the wall. Is that attaching something to a wall? You're attaching something to a structure. Is that going to be building? We won't talk about that now. We'll talk about that in the next week or two. That's just to understand where we're going in terms of adding things to a building. I'm not just talking about building a west wing to, right, we have an apartment on 6E and I take over 6F. We're not talking about building that. We're not talking about adding another wing to your house. Just adding something to the structure of your house also. But before we get to those things, I want to talk about the basic part. The most basic or the starting points for bona is building, working with dirt. Working with dirt, because that's the first part that you have to do when you build a house, is you have to get the floor straight. So we have a number of halachas that talk about building with dirt, and the Gemara in Shabbos Ayin Gimel Amud Beis 73b talks about two different things that could happen with dirt. Let's say you have dirt on the floor, and there's a hole there. So what do you want to do to that hole? What? You want to fill that hole. So filling a hole of dirt is a violation of an Issur D'oraisa. What happens if there's a mound on your floor of dirt? So then it will be equally an Issur D'oraisa to flatten out or even out that mound, whether it means removing some of the top or pushing it down, whatever it is, flattening out that mound, that little bump. Both of those inverse cases will both be violations. What will they be? Violations of? So now here it depends. If it's in a field, what do you call making a hole in a field? Zoraya would be if you would put the seeds there or water it before Zoraya. What do we call making a hole for seeds? Choresh, plowing. That's what you meant. Yes. Yes, if you do the action of making a hole in a field, or inversely, getting rid of a mound in a field, that will be choresh, plowing. That's not today's shiur. That's not this series. However, if you do that same exact thing, or those same exact two things, meaning make a mound, fill in a hole, or remove a mound and flatten it out, in a building, in a house, that same activity in a house will be considered bona. So the first rule that we're learning about bona is that if you're in a house, you cannot flatten the ground, you cannot fill in any dirt from any holes, you cannot flatten any bumps in the floor. Now, that doesn't apply to most of our houses, especially for people like us who live on the 6th floor, the 5th floor, the 4th floor, and the 3rd floor, but what happens on Sukkos? On Sukkos, if you have your sukkah not on a patio porch, but on, let's say, the actual ground, and I come from Brooklyn, so even our backyards are made out of cement. But some people might come from places where you have backyards that are made with that green stuff, and the brown stuff underneath, whatever that, what do they call that again? Grass, right, I remember, I used to, right. So even if you're sitting on grass, so there, if you would want to, for example, listen to this, the Mishnah, the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Tzadi Heim and Aleph, 95a, says, Hamechabed. What is Hamechabed? Ezehu mechubad hamechabed esabrios. What's Hamechabed? Somebody who? What does kavod mean? What's Hamechabed? Somebody who honors, right? Wrong. In this Gemara, Hamechabed means to sweep. Mechabed is modern Hebrew and Aramaic Hebrew and Talmudic Hebrew. Mechabed means to sweep. Why? Because when you want to honor somebody who you respect, you take a broom and you brush them up and down, right? No. So Hamechabed is you want to honor, make the place that you're in nice. That's called Mechabed. And in all the Mishnayos words, Mechabed means to honor also, but when it's talking about floors, it's talking about sweeping. So somebody who sweeps the floor, says the Gemara, Chayav Chatas. Has to be a Korban Chatas if he does it by mistake, or she does it by mistake. That tells you that it's an Isser Mideh Oraisa, because you only bring Korbanos for Yisurim D'Oraisa. So it's an Isser from the Torah to sweep the floor, of course, it's talking about a dirt floor, on Shabbos. So that means, if you have a sukkah in your backyard, on the floor, on the grass, wherever it is, and you sweep the floor, that's an Isser D'Oraisa. Oh my goodness gracious, I'm glad that we have concrete in our backyard in Brooklyn. Baruch Hashem for Brooklyn. Oh, we have holes in our concrete. You're right. So we'll talk about that. So what's the problem that happens when you sweep? What happens when you sweep? Let's think. Look down on the floor very carefully. There's sweeping. There's dirt. There's dust, and there are little small bumps and humps. And as you sweep, you're taking the bumpy parts of the dirt and pushing them into the holy part of the dirt to make the whole floor even. And therefore, you're doing exactly what we just said is also d'oraisa to do 5 minutes ago, filling in a hole or flattening out a bump or a hump and the dirt. So therefore, halacha l'maisa, one is, halacha l'maisa, if a person does this, let me rephrase that. Halacha l'maisa, if any person you know might have swept the floor of the sukkah, they should bring a korban chatas, be'ezus Hashem, when Mashiach rebuilds the Beis HaMikdash, that's the halacha l'maisa. Before you get into investing in sheep commodities, you should just keep in mind, try to avoid sweeping the sukkah if you have a sukkah on the grass or on the dirt outside. Similarly, if you have a picnic in your bungalow colony or something like that, or in your backyard, if you have that green stuff in your backyard, again, even if somebody, that little nincompoop, poured the whole box of whatever on the floor and there are going to be bugs and you want to sweep it up so you don't get all the bugs and mosquitoes coming to your backyard, well, you can't sweep it because that's going to be an Issa D'Oraisa. Could you pick up the pieces? Well, if it's a mixture of like pebbles and dirt clumps and crumbs of whatever, that will be Borer. But if it's just, bigger pieces, so of course you could pick it up if they're not really mixed together. But keep in mind, you want to avoid sweeping dirt floors. But Baruch Hashem for you and Baruch Hashem for me, we mostly do not have dirt floors in our homes. Question?
What if it's like a patio or something as cement?
So let's think for a minute. If it's a patio of bricks, then what's between those bricks?
Dirt.
So then what you might be doing is you might be filling in those crevices with whatever you're sweeping, either dirt or crumbs from your graham crackers that your little sister or niece spilled, and that might still equally be a problem, filling in those crevices of filling in a hole. That might be a problem. If there's already concrete between, or it's tiles there's grout, thank you, that's the word, grout or concrete between the bricks or between the paving stones, then you wouldn't have the problem because it would just be a regular paved or floor like we have in our houses. But, my friends, let me share with you something a little bit interesting. The Shulchan Aruch says, based on this Gemara that we just discussed, that, of course, the Shulchan Aruch is talking about a dirt house, a dirt floor. And the Shulchan Aruch says that you're not asur l'chabed habayis. You're not allowed to sweep the floor in the house. Elim kein, unless the floor is mirutzaf. What word do you think mirutzaf comes from? Mirutzaf. What's the shorosh of mirutzaf? Better than retzaf. Retzaf means contiguous. Retzaf, contiguous. Better than that. A word that you know. Ritzpah. What's a ritzpah? A floor. What we call a floor. This is the ritzpah, whether it's carpet, whether it's linoleum, whether it's tile, whether it's wood. That's a ritzpah, is a floor. So the Shulchan Aruch says you're not allowed to sweep the floor unless the floor is mirutzaf. It has flooring on it. If that would be the case, then in all of our house, as long as it's not sukkah time and it's not the summer in the bungalow colony where they have the green stuff outside, you should be fine because you all have flooring in your house. However, the Ramah on the next, right after that Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Shabbos Shin Lamed Zayin 337 Sif Beis 337.2 says the Ramah, V'yesh machmirin afilu b'merutzaf, that there are those who are machmir even by floors like you have and I have. Do we pass like that? V'chein nohagin, we are machmir for this opinion, says the Ramah. This is our minhag, and he adds two words, V'ein l'shanos, and you shouldn't change it. Meaning the minhag that we have, us Ashkenazim, do follow the opinion that even if the floor has a flooring, you are not allowed to sweep the floor. Oh my goodness gracious. I sweep the floor after every meal. Especially those of you who have been to my family, have my house and know my children, you understand why. So that means, okay, it's not saying you're getting a kum chatas, but, you know, because you don't, I don't have a dirt floor. I live on the sixth floor, in fact. I have five different ceilings underneath me. But you're not even allowed to sweep a floor that has flooring, linoleum, tiles, wood, whatever it is. Okay, it's true. The next line says, Al yedei akum muta. By with the guy, it's muta. You could tell a non-Jewish person to please sweep the floor for you if there's a floor there, right? You can't tell a guy to do a malacha for you. So, like, I don't know if I could tell a guy to actually sweep the outside. But if you have a floor there, that's definitely okay. Actually, a goy might even be mutter. Right, a goy is a mutter to do even outside, even if it's outside. Let's just pause here for a minute because it's a very important halacha. Let's say it's outside. What happens when you sweep the floor? What are you trying to do? When I sweep the floor, let's talk about a sukkah because we're going to come out with a very important halacha from this point. When you have a sukkah and you want to sweep the floor, why are you sweeping the floor in the sukkah after somebody spilled graham cracker crumbs? Because you want it clean, you want to get rid of the bugs. But what happens, memela, by the way, the floor gets evened out. What do we call it when you do something and something else happens, by the way, automatically by itself? A psik resha. What is the classic example, perhaps, of a psik resha? What? I can't hear you. Yes. The Gemara's example, the word psik resha, psik means to cut off. That's the Gemara's source. So it talks about doing something and something else happens automatically. The Gemara says, well, you're going to cut off the head of a chicken and it's not going to die. I don't want to kill a chicken. I don't want to kill. It's Shabbos. You can't kill. I just need a chicken head to play ball with. That's the example, to play ball. Children in the olden days were much more violent than today. They like playing not with softballs, not with baseballs, not with soccer balls. Not with, dominoes. They like playing with chicken heads. It's a good shape to throw to your friend. But I don't want to kill the animal. I just want the head to play ball with. So the Gemara says, oh, what do you mean? You're going to psik reisha v'lo yamas? You're going to cut off the head and it's not going to die? Of course it's going to die. And therefore, if you do one thing and it causes something to happen automatically, that's asur da'araisa. So if you don't want the chicken to die, you just want the head to play ball with, it's asa daraisa to cut off the head. You just want the ball. You just want to use a ball, but it's going to die, and you killed it. Oh, that wasn't your intention, but it happened automatically. What's a very, 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 very common in all of your kitchens scenario? Psik resha. The light in the refrigerator. The light in the refrigerator. You intend to get yourself a cup of tomato juice, right? You want to get some tomato juice in the fridge. You open up the fridge, what happened? So most of the bulbs are incandescent. Incandescent bulbs are the ones that have a filament inside, not like these bulbs. But the filament bulbs, incandescent bulbs, those are an issa d'oraisa. Those are clearly an issa d'oraisa because there's a wire in there that's glowing hot, that like it's like a little fire in there, it's a glowing red, it's a red hot wire. Okay, whatever it is. And therefore, incandescent bulbs are an issa d'oraisa. But that you don't want to turn on light, you just want to get your tomato juice. But by getting tomato juice, you're automatically making the light turn on. It's sort of like, I don't want the to kill the chicken, I just want the head. Well, same thing, I just want the tomato juice, I don't want to turn on the light, but you're turning on the light. That's a psikresha. Psikresha is asa d'oraisa. So if you left the light on in your refrigerator, for a purse, for a Jew, for you to open it up, that'll be an iser mide oraisa. But are you actually turning on a light? No, you're getting tomato juice. So therefore, listen to this. I just told you a minute ago that you can ask a guy to sweep the floor because it's not really, he's not plowing, he's not digging, he's not flattening ground, he's sweeping the floor to get rid of the graham cracker crumbs, to make it clean, to get so bugs don't come. So since it's only psikresha, you can ask a guy to do it. Based on that, we can apply to our kitchens if we forget to take out the light or forget to turn off the light before Shabbos. Based on this halacha, a psikresha, since it's a little, it's not actually doing, it's not, I mean, I'm causing the light to be turned on automatically, but I'm not actually turning on the light. It's only a psikresha, and a psikresha is permitted to tell a guy to do. Let me explain this in other words. I'm not allowed to tell a guy to do malacha for me. Here, it's not really called a malacha. It's a notch below malacha. It's asur d'oraisa, psikresha, causing something to happen automatically when that's not your intention, not your direct intention, is an isur d'oraisa, but it's not a real malacha because that's not what you were intending to do. So it's only a psikresha. Well, psikresha, since it's a notch down from a regular malacha, is mutter to tell a guy to do. So therefore, it will be mutter to tell a guy to sweep the floor in your sukkah on the dirt. And similarly, according to many opinions, it will be mutter to ask a guy to open up a refrigerator door because it's a mira lenachri on a psikresha, and that will be mutter according to many opinions. Yes. It sounds to me like an Issa D'oraisa. Not an Issa D'oraisa that you bring a carbon on because it's not a, because it's not the rep, it sounds to me like an Issa D'oraisa. I don't know what his logic is. Okay, psikresha is clearly paskin as an Issa D'oraisa. I mean, unless he holds that the lights in the fridge are not, unless he holds the light in the fridge is not, it could be he holds the light would only be an Issa D'rabana, which itself is a big question, and maybe psikresha on Issa D'rabana, that could be. But most pesukim don't hold like that. Or Moshe Feinstein, I don't think, held like that. Or Zalman Orbach didn't hold like that. There are those opinions who say that even you can't even ask a guy in this case. So that you can't even ask a guy to open up the refrigerator. That's what Shlomo Zalman says. But some say that you can't ask a guy.
Ask a guy to turn the light off. Take out the light. Or to reapply the tape that is off.
That would be more permitted. You're telling a guy to do an Issa D'Rabbanan B'Makom Sorech. Without getting into it, it's probably, yeah, once you open the fridge by mistake, you mean. You open the fridge by mistake, oh my gosh, the light is on. So then yes, you could probably tell the guy to turn off the light. Turning off the light is different than turning on the light. Without getting into those halachas. Without getting into halachas in Sirchil Gufa, we're not going to get into that for now. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right. D'oraisa, but a lower level. And it's a real malacha is I intend to flatten the ground. That's a regular malacha. Of choresh or bona. Sweeping is a psikresha of that malacha. Meaning it's automatic. It's going to happen. It's not my goal. My goal is to get rid of the graham cracker crumbs. So I don't get bugs. But what's going to happen? It's automatically going to happen that some dirt is going to fill in whatever pumps there are and some other things are going to be going to move around the dirt, it's going to cause this malacha to happen. So that's an Issa D'oraisa, but only a psikresha Issa D'oraisa. I don't know if you bring chayav a korban chatas on a psikresha. Right. If you did it with the intention to actually flatten the ground, that would be korban chatas. If it's sweeping, it's only a psikresha, maybe it wouldn't be chayav a korban chatas. So maybe I should withdraw what I said before. But sweeping might be, since it's only a psikresha, maybe it won't be a korban chatas. I should withdraw what I said before. I said before that sweeping would be a korban chatas. Chances are, since it's only a psikresha, it's probably not a korban chatas. It will be asur d'oraisa, but not if you only bring a korban chatas if you do a real malacha, not a psikresha.
And then if you do then
that would be an asur d'oraisa, that's a real malacha, and then you would have to bring a korban chatas. Thank you for clarifying that. I appreciate that. Okay. But that was a side tangent, just to talk about psik resha and asking a guy to do. But we're caught in a bind right now. We just finished saying that Rama just told us a gigantic chumra that even when I have linoleum flooring or tile floors with grout, there's nothing but hard synthetic material below my feet, I'm still not allowed to sweep. I mean, the reason for that is it's a gzeira. It's a gzeira. If you sweep in your, you know, in our kitchens on the sixth floor, I might sweep outside. And therefore, it's also d'rabbanan to sweep your floors on Shabbos. Did you ever hear this before? Who here swept their floor this past Shabbos besides myself? Come on, be honest. You could do it. The first step of the process, you know, the 12 steps. First step is acknowledging that you did. You know, alcoholics learns from Hilchas Tshuva. The first step is vidui. Hakaras Hachet, you have to know that you did it. Okay, it's okay. It's mutter. Why? So there's a Be'er Halacha. On the side of the Mishnah Berurah, the Mishnah Chafetz Chaim wrote his longer essays where he wants to talk about Halacha a little more in depth. He says, wait a second. This Rama is talking about, what did Rama say? He says that you can't sweep anywhere, even on carpet, even on stone, linoleum. Why? Why can't you? So, because it's a gzeru, you might sweep, you know, on the dirt floors. How many people in Washington Heights, in their homes, have dirt floors? How many people in Teaneck have dirt floors? In Los Angeles, is it like a funky, new age, you know, earthy kind of thing, maybe? No? Englewood? No? Okay, so, three wonderful Jewish cities in Klal Yisrael have no homes in the entire city that have dirt floors. Says the Be'er Halacha, something that you need very broad shoulders to do, which the Chafetz Chaim did have. He says, even though the Rama says that it would be Asur Dirabanan to sweep in our homes because it's a gzeru you might come to sweep on a dirt floor, if there's a city where there are absolutely no or practically no dirt floors and homes, there's no room for this gzeira. We're worried that you'll see me sweep in my house, so you'll sweep in your house? Well, your house is linoleum. My house is wood. And your house is tile. I don't care if you might learn from me. You'll just sweep also in a place where there's no problem, because there's no dirt in your house either. Or in any other house in this city. And therefore, says the Be'er Halacha, Chiddush, that this Ramah, this Chumrah of the Ramah that you're not allowed to sweep, does not apply in our cities in today's day and age, where no one in our community has dirt floors. A tremendous kula of the Chafetz Chaim. So again, if you just learned the Ramah, if you were an Ashkenazi, you would not be able to sweep your floor of linoleum or of carpet or of tile or wood, comes the Mishnah Berurah and says in the Be'er Halacha, since the whole Isser of the Ramah is based on a gzeru that you might sweep dirt in a city where there is no dirt floor, it will be, there's nothing to be concerned that you might come to do, and therefore it will be mutter lechatchila, says the Mishnah Berurah in his Be'er Halacha commentary, that you are permitted to sweep in our house. So halacha maisa, you are permitted to sweep in your house on Shabbos. Yes. Great question. If there's a yeshuv, let's say there's a yeshuv somewhere in the, wherever it is, this side of the green line, that side of the green line, where there are still some dirt floors that haven't been yet paved, in that yeshuv it will be prohibited to sweep in somebody's kitchen, even if they have a floor. In that yeshuv only. The next yeshuv over, where everyone already has floors, it will be mutter. Depends on the city. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says. Excellent point. Yes. You're raising a very good point. You're asking that what about people who have sort of porches outside their house, backyards, that they do, so, but they don't live there. It's not a house. I don't know if the same...
It's in the backyard.
It's in the backyard. I mean, they had backyards in the olden days also. They had chatzerim then, and I assume the chatzerim weren't floored. I don't... I mean, they had barbecues in the time of Mishnah Berurah too. Hey, I could have said Aleph Tishrei. Okay, so that was sweeping. Let's go to the next aspect, halach lamaisa, of binyan topics regarding dirt. Let me share with you a line or two of Chazal, and then we'll apply it to things in the park that we're all familiar with. The Gemara, the Mishnah actually, there's a perek in Masech Shabbos called Habona. You know why? What do you think? What? Yeah, because the first was Habona. Great. What do you think it talks about in that first Mishnah? Building. So in that first Mishnah it says, Habona kol shul chayav. If you build, how much do you have to build in order? You have to build a whole floor to be chayav daraisa? You have to build a room, a wing of a house? What do you have to build? How much? Kol shul, the tiniest bit, is already constitutes an issa daraisa of building. Now, right after that Mishnah, the Gemara says, wait a second. What, like, why should you be chai? Like, what could you do? What's so tiny that you'll do, but it will still be significant, that it could still constitute bona? So the Gemara says, you know what poor people do? Poor people, in the olden days, they didn't have banks. So where did you hide money? Well, I guess under your mattress. But let's say they didn't have mattresses. So poor people, it said, would hide their prutos. They take their finger, dig a little hole in the floor, put some pennies inside, cover it over. So you see a tiny, tiny, tiny little hole that you made, right? We said that making a hole in a house is bona, right? If you do make a hole in a field, that's chorish, that's plowing. Make a hole in a house, that's bona. That's what this Gemara is talking about. So I make a hole in my floor of wherever I live, my hovel, my hut, my shack where I live, poke a tiny hole, I stick my little quarters in that I've saved up, cover it over with dirt. That was what a poor person could do. So we see that even a tiny little hole, a tiny little, almost meaningless hole, is going to be bona. Where was that done in the Mishkan? The Gemara suggests, the Gemara rejects it, I'll tell you a simple reason, that in the Mishkan there were people who had to sew the curtains. So what did they do when they finished with their sewing needle and they had to go home and come back tomorrow morning to continue sewing? They stuck it in the ground or dug a little tiny, tiny hole in the ground and left it in the ground for safekeeping. So you see, a tiny little bona could have occurred in the Mishkan. I don't know why the Gemara rejects that possibility. The Gemara says, no, don't be silly. In the Mishkan, they would never put their needles in the ground, because if you put your needles in the ground, then... What? You can't find it? What else? You might get poked. That's not what the Gemara says. Neither of those. Those are reasonable. What happens if you leave metal in the ground? What? It doesn't become tummy. No, anything attached to the ground can't become tummy. What do you say? What? Yeah. Or in simple English, it rusts. Right. How do you say rust in Spanish? Anyone know? Oxidatio or something like that. We had that in Shia. I was teaching this Mishnah, and then I said the word rust, and some of the Spanish speakers, some Latin Americans from Chile or Chile and Venezuela, I asked them, how do you say rust? Do they know what rust is? And I don't know what rust means. So I explained. I said, oh, oxidatio. I said, yeah, oxidizing, oxidation. Right, so the Gemara says, you can't. No, we're not. They didn't put their needles inside the ground. It will rust. So that clearly can't be what they did. Either way, what do you see from that little story? That a tiny little hole in the ground constitutes bona. Now, let's think about the following. Do you know any activities specifically that children are involved with on Shabbos that involve digging little holes in dirt? Sandboxes. Sandboxes seem so innocuous. What could be better than your little kid who's just willing to go keep himself or herself busy in a sandbox on a long Shabbos afternoon in the middle of July or August? Right? Perfect. They're keeping themselves busy, out of the house. What could be more wonderful than that? Okay, if it's a little baby, you might not have to, but you're not, I'm saying, certainly someone who's Yigil Chinuch, there's an issue, you can't just have a kid doing Yisurim Doraisa, right? Probably Doraisa. He's intending to dig a hole. Perhaps that might be Doraisa. Or to make a cat, right? How did we make, I don't know about you, but when we used to go to the beach and make our castles, we'd put the dirt on top of it. That's the opposite, right? Making a hump or taking away the hump, whatever it is, those are probably Yisurim Daraisa, Bona. or call it Choresh because it's in the field, not in the house, whatever you want. Should be an Issa Daraisa. So, just to understand this a little bit more clearly, there's a halacha. Again, we're going to go on a tangent, and then we'll be able to come back home to understand the parameters of sandboxes a little bit more clearly. Has anyone here fulfilled the mitzvah of Kisli Hadam? Okay? Anyone else? Okay, Kisli Hadam is a very... not the type of mitzvah that we in Washington Heights fulfill too often. At Kaparos you did it? Right. So what happens, Kaparos, you go do Kaparos with a chicken like some people used to do, or some people still do. And the shechter and the halacha is that after there's shechita done on a chaya or an oaf, not a behema, not a sheep or a cow. So when they do regular shechita for meat, they don't do kisui hadam, but on an oaf, they do kisui hadam. You take some dirt from the ground and sprinkle it on top of the blood. That's in mitzvah aseid araisa. And by the way, are you allowed to cook on yantif? You cook on yantif? Yes. Are you allowed to cook meat on Yantif? Yes. Are you allowed to make a barbecue on Yantif? Figure out how to do it properly? Yes. Are you allowed to shecht an animal on Yantif? Yes. Wait a second. But if you shecht an animal on a chaya or an oaf, what do you have to do? Kisui hadam. You can't, I don't know if you can shecht if you don't have dirt available. How are you going to do kisui hadam? You take dirt and sprinkle it, right? How are you going to take that dirt? Where is that dirt going to come from? By taking some dirt from the ground. Oh, wait a second. Isn't that an Issa D'oraisa of Choresh or Bona, some indoors or outdoors, whatever it is? Taking that dirt will be an Issa D'oraisa because you're taking dirt and obviously there's going to either be a little hole or you took dirt from the ground. Whatever it is, you took dirt from the ground, that's going to be Issa D'oraisa because of what we're discussing. Choresh, Bona, forget Hilchos Shechita. So how am I going to do Kisui Hadam on Yontif? So this is a discussion in Maseches Beitza, the very beginning of Maseches Beitza, which is Maseches Beitza's nickname is Maseches Yom Tov. It happens to start with a discussion of an egg that was born on Yontif, but it's really all the halachas of Yom Tov. So Maseches Beitza is Maseches Yom Tov. So in Maseches Beitza, it talks about what you do, I think in the first Mishnah, what you do, how you do Shechita on Yontif, if you're going to need to do Kisui Hadam, and there, and it's Paskin in the Shulchan Aruch, and Tav Tzadi Ches, that's 498, which is not Hilchos Shabbos. It's Hilchos Shechita B'Yom Tov. Hilchos Shechita B'Yom Tov. There it says that you have to have some dirt available for Kisui Hadam, if you want to do your Kisui Hadam. And if you didn't, if you didn't have any dirt available, but you already did Shechita, then if you have, listen carefully, Afar Tichoach. Afar Tichoach, what's Afar Tichoach? Afar Tichoach is dirt that's already crumbled. It's already crumbled. You don't have to crumble it up, it's not like a clod of earth. Rather, it's already, it's granulated earth, granulated dirt. Then, you could use that to do Kisui Hadam. Ask the Mishnah Berurah, even if it's granulated, so you're not going to be crumbling it, but when you take this dirt, isn't it going to still make a hole? Mishnah Berurah says it must be. That, what hole are you making? When you take, if you're dealing with sun, with earth, that's with dirt that's very, very granulated, it's all broken up into pieces. If you take a little bit, what sometimes happens automatically? The hole fills itself in. You take from the middle some granulated earth. If it's very soft, granulated, right, chopped up dirt, it will sort of just fill itself in. And that's not making a hole in the dirt. That's Hilchos Shechita on Yontif. Now let's take Hilchos Shechita on Yontif and come to Arashayla, many miles and light years away from Hilchos Shechita B'Yom Tov, the little kid in the backyard playing in a sandbox. We played in sandboxes before. Sandboxes, if the sand is good sand, what happens if you take some sand from the middle of the sandbox? What's going to happen immediately? Sand from the sides will slip into the place, and therefore you didn't end up making a hole. And therefore, it will be mutter. If it's sandbox that's dry. But if the sandbox is wet, what happens if you take some dirt? Then the dirt that you took has been removed and there's now an indentation or a little hole in the ground. And that will be usser. So what would be the halacha with a sandbox? Based on what we just explained, it really depends on if your sandbox has been kept dry or your sandbox is wet. If the sandbox is dry and the kids are going to play with the dirt and it's all just going to fold back in, that sounds like it's okay. Just like the shechita on Yantif. On the other hand, if it's dirt, or if the sandbox is moist, there's moisture there, you take sand, it's going to cause a hole. That sounds like it's a problem. And this is the conclusion that I arrived with after doing whatever research I just shared with you. I opened up a sefer called Orchas Shabbos, which I've mentioned many times when we did Borer and Vishal, and I was so excited to see that he came to the exact, I didn't even know he was going to talk about sandboxes, and not only did he talk about sandboxes, but he made the exact same point that I just told you and I just shared with you about sandboxes, that based on this whole discussion, that it should depend whether the sand is wet or wet or dry. If it's dry sand, then the things will just, you take some sand and it just fills itself in, so you make a hole. That would be mutter. If it's moist sand, Imam says that exact distinction. I was so excited. I wish you would have been there to party with me. It was Imam so exciting for me. But if it's wet, then it's going to stay a hole, that would be a problem. Yeah. Because you're making holes. That's a great question. Instead of talking, yes, you're right. Our minds are all thinking about walking on wet beaches. I hate to say it, but we have a much more, Gael Maisa, Halacha Maisa. What happens when you're wearing boots that have some kind of, especially if they have a marking on the bottom of your boot, or they have these, what are they called? Imprints on the bottom. What are the engravings? What's the word? What? Treads, or sometimes they even have words, and you walk in the snow, right? That's, I think, a little more halacha ma'aseh for us, maybe? I'm sorry. Sorry to burst your bubble, Michal. Like when I wear my high heels, those very pointy high heels that you've always seen me wear, and I walk on grass, it's also a big problem, right? Because you're... That's what I'm saying. Somebody walks behind me, just drops in those seeds after I walk with those high. So I never researched the high heels issue for numerous reasons. I think it's mutter to walk with sneakers or with tread or boots that have treads in them on snow. I assume because it's not even like a psikri. It's even less than a psikresha. Psikresha is like, that's not what I'm doing, but it happens automatically. Maybe this is even like less than that. Why, I'm not really sure, but... No, but if you went out right after it snows, when there's a fresh snow, you step, if you're the perverse person, like it happens to me, because I have to go to chakras. So on a snowy day, who else would be out of the house at 7:15, 7:30, whatever else. So you're the first person, virgin snow, you step in it, you saw the guy who walked before me, he had Reebok, he had Nike, he had Echo shoes, you could read everything that it says there. I think that would still be mutter. It's a good point though. One additional, maybe we could make the sandbox a little more mutter, because after all, some sandboxes are just part of the ground. But sometimes you have a sandbox that's in an actual plastic container. It's an actual box. It's not just what they call a sandbox, which is really not a box. It's just a sand place. But it sounds better to say sandbox. What happens if it's a real box? It's a plastic box or a wooden box that has sand in it. So there, it's not really connected to the ground. So maybe we shouldn't have the issues of bone or attaching or doing this to the ground or that to the ground because it's not really attached. Should that make it any better? Unfortunately, the Magen Avraham on those halachas where it's talking about Shechita on Yontif says that even if you have dirt that's not really attached to the ground, there's some interference, whatever plastic sheet or some other bottom of a box, it still will be the same problem of bona by taking that dirt out. And therefore, the fact that it's in a box will not help you. Yeah. That is correct. I don't remember. Yes, you're asking an excellent question. You're saying that there the Mishnah, the Shulchan Aruch only permitted it. If you did shchit already, you didn't have dirt available, and you didn't prepare yourself dirt, then we'll allow you to take it if it's granulated already. I have to think about that. Yes, thank you. The last discussion that I want to have today. We have, okay, well, I don't want to start it and not finish it. Maybe we'll start it and hopefully we'll be able to finish it. Very halacha l'maisa. And that is something else that is applicable to bona, and, or the opposite of bona, but it could be bona, something that has to do with things that are attached to the ground. And that is, and you'll see how it ends up being a case of bona, plunging a toilet on Shabbos. Oriyantif. Very halacha l'maisa. Now, if you live in the Heights, there's always a super. Once you get to the burbs, you don't have supers to fix your toilets on Shabbos. Especially if it's a yantif and there's a few days involved. You're not going to flush the toilet, it's any stuff. That's a serious issue. Are you allowed to plunge the toilet? Believe it or not, there's an explicit Gemara that practically talks about plunging toilets. Different words, but I'll tell you the Gemara. I'll share the Gemara with you. It's Ksuvis, it's not Shabbos. It's interesting. When we learn this, you see how sometimes we deal with Shabbos issues, and the proofs and the sources are things that are totally, like, who would have thought that you come to hear a shir on Hilchos Bona on Yontif, and you're learning from the Halachos of Shechita on Yontif. Kisi Hadam for Shechita on Yontif. And that teaches us the halachas of bona. It's interesting. It's important to realize how Pesach works. Okay, plunging a toilet. So let's go to Ksuvis. Daf Samach Amar Aleph 60a. There, the Braisa says, Nachum Ish Galia, I guess he's from a place called Galia. Nachum from Galia says that if you have a pipe that got filled in with schmutz, Rashi says, what kind of schmutz? Hay or straw and grass that block the flow of water. And what happens when you have, I assume it's talking about like a gutter. You know, we have at the edges of our roofs, we have a gutter that carries the water so it doesn't drip down the actual side of the building and ruin the walls. Rather, it siphons all the water that from the roof off to a pipe that sends down to a convenient location. That's a gutter. So that's exactly what we're talking about here. What happens if it fills up? Well, the water is going to not flow through it to your convenient location. It's going to float, just drip over wherever that stoppage is, and it's going to, well, in this case, drip into the house. Says Nachum from Galia, if you have a tzinar that got filled with this schmutz, you're allowed to push it with your foot. Notice, with your foot, that's going to be with a shinui. Bitzina, if no one sees, if it's private, if no one's looking, on Shabbos. Why? Because you're fixing it with a shinui, kila'achar yad, because you're doing it with your foot. And therefore, listen carefully, since you're doing it with a shinui, kila'achar yad, and it's in a place where there's a hefset involved, where there's a financial loss, I guess it's dripping into your house, it's going to ruin your house, so it's not going to be aser. So if we stop right here, and Rabbi Yashav does stop right here, it sounds like we have practically an explicit Gemara that says, if I have a pipe that's stuffed up, and I want to unstuff it, then if there's a hefset involved, if there's a financial loss that could happen, like, for example, if you have water keeps coming out of your toilet and it floods, that could cause a hefset. I have a friend, dear friend, and they had a bath that somehow didn't stop running. I think it was on the second floor. It ruined the entire floor of the second floor. Where the water came down to the first floor, ruined the floor of the first floor, and it cost $200,000 to fix because of a runny toilet or bath. I don't know if they were home, they weren't home. I mean, the Baruch Hashem, the insurance, I came into the house like, wow, you redecorated. And the lady of the house said, well, no, this is what our insurance covered because we lost half our house. So there could be a hefset involved. That's a hefset or Reuben. Even if it's not such a gigantic hefset. So again, the Gemara says if you have a hefset, that's going to happen. And you do it with a shinui. I'm not exactly sure how to plunge a toilet with a shinui. I don't want to suggest with your teeth, because that's just not pleasant to think about, but I guess that would work. It's no worse than your feet. I don't think you could, like, plunge. I mean, the Gemara is talking about cleaning it out with your feet, pushing it with your foot. That works if you're talking about a gutter that you sort of just stick your foot in and drag out the schmutz. But if you're talking about a plunger, I don't know how to do that with your feet. So if you have a financial loss, and you do it with a shinui, and no one's watching, we'll see what, you know, that's just important because it's, people might think whatever it is. So, if you have those three conditions, it's permitted. Let's finish the sentence. But, if there's no financial loss involved, or even if there is a financial loss, you don't do it, but you do it with your hands, or people are watching. Okay, so I'm not worried about what you just closed the bathroom door. If you don't have those other conditions that you did a bishinui and that there's a financial loss, it sounds like it's going to be prohibited. And that's Rabbi Yoshev Psach. Rabbi Yoshev Paskins, that it is prohibited to plunge a toilet unless there's a financial loss and unless it's done with a shinui. That's how Rabbi Yoshev Paskins, Rabbi Yoshev Zatzal. But Ezra Hashem, in the beginning of next week, we'll see how Rabbi Shlomo Zalman responds to this and deals with these issues, and we'll see how Rabbi Shlomo Zalman comes out, halacha lemaisa, his psak, for our plunging toilets. Stay tuned. Question on this? You're saying, would Kavod HaBrios be the same strength of motivation as a hefsed? Meaning a hefsed, okay, you have to do kalachar yad, you have to do, I think it's the same kind of genre. Kalachar yad, you have to do it with a shina. Kalachar yad, or your foot or something. No one could see. But maybe instead of there being a financial hefsed, you have a different motivation, like Kavod HaBrios is pretty disgusting to be in a house that really smells, or where you have guests going to a bathroom that's stuffed up. That's the only bathroom, and that's even more unpleasant, 100%. Yeah, that's a great question. I don't have an answer for you right now. Okay, so stay tuned. Leaving you off, yeah, I remember. Any of you remember Dukes of Hazzard? Again, I'm dating myself. Dukes of Hazzard was a TV show when I was in about fifth or sixth grade, and it was about these two cool guys who drove this cool sports car. And the sports car always got into trouble, and they always put the commercials when the sports car, like, took a bump, flying through the air. That's when they took the commercial. So that's exactly what we just did. We just said, it's us to plunge your toilets on Shabbos. We're going to take our commercial, see you in a week, and then we'll see what happens when the car lands.